Right, well, hi everybody. My name is Mikey Lynch. I lead the staff team of the Uni Fellowship of Christians, AFES Ministry in Hobart, working with local students and those with higher English competency. And this is other members of the staff who we work together with students to run our work down here in Tassie. Christine Jolly, what's your role with the Uni Fellowship team?
Hi, I coordinate our fellowship groups, small groups of 2 to 5 students who gather together weekly to read the Bible and pray, and pray specifically that God would use them to let Jesus be known through their words and their lives and their actions.
Yeah. And Andrew Maskell.
Yeah, so my role is about raising, training, and sending. So I'm responsible for that with the Uni Fellowship and everything kind of connected with it. So I want to create places and spaces and times and moments where we see training to take place, leaders are raised up, evangelism happens. So that running those with a purpose is my passion. Yep.
Yeah. Excellent. So we wanted to do a longer form video and podcast conversation about the state of things at UTAS here in Hobart, especially, although it does affect Launceston and elsewhere in the state as well. And that was triggered by an announcement that came out on the 5th of November of this year in the ABC News reporting. The article was University of Tasmania walks away from plans to move entirely from Sandy Bay into central Hobart. That was an announcement that didn't come as an enormous surprise, but it did clarify changes we were noticing about whether the planned complete move into a city centre campus would ever take place. That there were rumblings across the year, but then this was announced. The way it was framed was that there would be 4 sites, contingent upon government funding, 4 sites that UTAS would have across the city: a STEM campus at Sandy Bay, which would require a complete retrofit of existing buildings and some new buildings; a city campus built around the existing medical sciences and creative arts buildings, plus the forestry building, which is currently being renovated and stuff, which will be home for business, economics, humanities, and social sciences. Previous articles had said that law is staying at Sandy Bay, so that STEM campus presumably also includes the law campus, although there's no mention of that in this article. The third of these new sites would be the historic campus on the Hobart's Queen's Domain, featuring international school, outdoor education program, and parts of health like paramedics and nursing, and then a waterfront campus centred around the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies facilities at Taruna and on Hobart's waterfront. So that's the new announcement. It gives clarity that this is likely, if we stick to this is likely where UTAS is going to be for the next maybe 10 years or more, or at the very least what we're currently experiencing is going to continue to be the normal, which is not a complete city move nor a complete Sandy Bay return or majority Sandy Bay return. But that was the announcement, and because that was sufficiently definitive and specific in details, we thought it was kind of a good moment for us to stop and talk about our reactions to that announcement. But, you know, it's larger kind of implications as well to things we've already been noticing, already been dealing with, running Christian evangelism and training ministry through the AFES here in Hobart. I mean, one thing immediately, I mean, my thought, and then I'll hear what you guys have to say, is it is important to clarify that what they call 4 sites is really more like 8. The waterfront campuses at Hobart and Taruna, that's talking from Salamanca to Taruna. That's a long bike ride and, depending on the traffic, even, you know, a noticeable car drive. Not really one site. Similarly, when you think of the Hunter Street Fine School of Art, the Hedberg, mm-hmm. The Menzies Building, and then the Forestry Building, that's really 3 sites, at least, you know, with significant gaps between them. You know, so calling them 4 sites, we're really dealing more like 8, a very diffuse future. What are your thoughts and reactions to that announcement? Who wants to go first? Christine, Andy?
Christine. Well, I mean, one comment is...
Andy.
Sorry.
No, that's
Christine,
right.
Do you want to go?
No, go ahead.
One comment on that is simply when you're also on the ground, it's different when you're on the map as well. So on the map, it's like they're zoomed out on Google and it can look like it is quite close, that it's quite integrated, that certain buildings are all nice and close to each other, with the hope that it will create these connections. But when you're actually standing down there, you're like, oh, it's going to take me 15 minutes up that hill to walk to that building across this highway. And so psychologically, when you're there on the ground, it feels even further. So that's
even just the music school to the med school. It's like a longish block away. And so you wouldn't really think of like the music school and the med school as being one place quite, would you? You know?
Yeah. No, that's right. And so that's going to be
the two interact as well.
Yeah,
they're going to be extra hurdles by way of creating student interaction and crossover, and there being these kind of student zones, because the space is just too big.
Yeah, Christine, your thoughts?
The real challenge is that when emerging students, so current students as well as the next generation or two of students, they're not going to have the same experience of university as their parents and grandparents did. When we were at uni, we were rubbing shoulders and bumping into people who were studying electrical engineering and I was studying fine arts, and we were sitting a table away from each other in the cafeteria, and conversations were being overheard on the green or in the library that were not relevant necessarily to what you were studying, but it was expanding your experience of the world. And so the challenge is going to be that UTAS is going to have to put in the extra effort into those community spaces. Mm-hmm. And while they may be dispersed, what are they going to do actually and practically to bring a diversity of students together so you get the actual purpose of university to expose you to different ideas and people that you wouldn't have in your family group or in your community or in your faith community even? So that's a real challenge that I haven't heard them address at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's one, on one level, we need to admit, like, universities are never great at that community thing anyway, because that's never, universities never worked before because universities were great at it. They worked before because it just so happened the model involved large integrated campuses where it happened without trying, you know, and so it's more that university has slowly eroded those things, removing common lunch hours, making, you know, on in-person presence, optional hybrid learning, all these things, all of that erodes it. This will erode it further, as you say, through this diffusion of campuses and specialties. And then you suddenly have an institution having to do what it was never that good at, which is trying to bring people back together. And we've seen some of the post-COVID UTAS attempts at that, and it's limited in its ability. Look, it is worth saying UTAS has always had some degree of diffusion. So when I was at UTAS, the later years of the med degree were all at the clinical school in the city. And then when I came back to work for AFES, by that stage, even the first years were also starting. Their whole med degree was always separate from the Sandy Bay, from other disciplines. And that was a downside, but that's what it was. Music school, even when I was there, the Conservatorium of Music was completely its own world, and the School of Fine Arts was completely its own world. So there already was these little pockets, kind of little schools on their own. But you noticed it back then. You really did notice that the con experience, the Conservatorium of Music experience, was totally different to all the degrees that were like what Christine was describing, intermingling in Sandy Bay. You noticed the difference when med students no longer had a year mingling with others. Increasingly, med became this hermetically sealed thing, and so on. Yeah. So there's always been a bit of that with UTAS. It's ramped up, and then UTAS forced it by putting like the business school into office blocks that they're renting in the city to gesture at the move that would happen. Yeah. I mean, we were open to the possibility that a full city move could have worked, weren't we? We weren't total like save UTAS is the only optimal solution. Yep. What's different about a full UTAS move to the city compared to this four, really eight sites kind of retreat that UTAS has found itself in now?
I think one of the hopes with an all-in is that there's just more of a critical mass. And that is just crucial for social cohesion, for connecting, sharing ideas, and having a sense of that I'm a student, this is a student life, this is the place where I student and live my life in and out of. And so that will also then just spin off to facilitate a whole bunch of other things. Whereas when you don't have that critical mass, well, then they're diffused, they're spread out. So you don't have enough people at Sandy Bay campus, but then you don't quite have enough people anywhere else. And then when you don't quite have enough people everywhere, then people just basically don't stick and stay and hang and meet. And then they just go home.
Yeah, the design for the full city campus as well, for those familiar with the Sandy Bay campus in Hobart, there's like a central mall that runs from the Lays and Bees Cafe right down to Ovals at the bottom and the law school. And then even behind that, there's like overpasses that run up the hill to residential colleges up the top of College Road. And so there's this kind of, although it's quite separate, and, you know, people in life sciences on the other side of Churchill Avenue will, of course, have a lot less to do with law students down by the Oval, there still is the possibility that someone doing life sciences is dating someone doing law in the middle and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The plan was like that there were these parkways and walkways so that you could theoretically go from fine arts up past Hedberg, past Menzies, across diagonally through where arts is going to be to the library and then out to the A&D building and could kind of snake your way through a few city blocks. It still was pretty spread, but at least there were these kind of continuities, whereas that plan is not the plan now.
There will still be, I think, some of that, and it'll be interesting to see how that does play out. I think the advantage at Sandy Bay campus is you've got a bit of a heart, and that is there's Lays and Bees and there's the library, and so that's this central point which will drag people together or make people go there because, well, I've got to go to the library, or it's just nice to come and hang out on the grass. So that those points are kind of magnets. So there's a question mark over the design in the city, whether it will just end up being nice walkways. Will it be a good enough reason to pull people in and then keep people in? We'll have to see.
Yeah, so that's the plan. The benefit of having some clarity on it is that we all know to some degree that talking about UTAS all being in the city is not the conversation to be having in the midterm, probably even the long term. Yeah, like that conversation, unless things radically change again, we've got to say, let's stop thinking in terms of UTAS all being in the city. That's been on the cards since, you know, what, 5 years plus, you know, we've got to stop thinking about that. But we've also got to stop thinking, it seems, about things ever going back to UTAS with a heavy dominance in Sandy Bay. And even that was waning. And so this is the interesting thing, right? What we're seeing is a bunch of things have started to happen. Culture's changing anyway. People are working more part-time, more mature age students coming back to retrain. Those changes are happening anyway. Technology has changed the way people behave. Higher standards of living change where people want to go for food and coffee. People are living further out from the city for affordability reasons. Even the parents of school leavers may now not live and buy within easy walking, driving, riding distance in the city campuses. So there's that, you know, there's lots of other factors. The move to the hybrid learning model that UTAS has adopted increasingly since COVID, it committed this flipped classroom type thing to varying degrees. There's all these factors going on, plus anything that's unique to Tassie as a demography and all. So lots of things going on. But what we're seeing is that those changes and the acceleration of those changes, that's the future, at least for the midterm. Yeah. We're going to be dealing with young adults, uni students, churches connected with uni students, will be living in this kind of city now for years to come. And so we need to work out, well, what does social life, young adult networking, community, uni student ministry, churches with uni students, you know, what's that look like? What do you guys noticed are some of these then the differences we've noticed to have really accelerated since the COVID lockdowns and exacerbated by all those kind of factors I've kind of rattled off? What are some of the noticeable differences from those who maybe went to uni or had some connections with UTAS or other AFES groups in the past? Christine.
So economic factors apply to choices that even 18 and 19, 20 year olds make. So one of the changes that we've seen in the past 5 years is a lot more young adults living at home. So if they choose to study locally instead of going interstate or overseas for their university degree, they're often staying at home with their parents and amongst their siblings, which means that it's more cost effective, but they're often still having family commitments, being home for family dinner and participating in family holidays, also being involved still in their local church and local church ministries. And so just those alone mean that a desire and a pursuit to find community and to find attachments to new relationships has diminished significantly when it comes to being involved in a university specific mission. It's not filling a met need. But then you have the economic factor as well of those who are coming from interstate or from up north who maybe were lucky enough to get one of the rooms that the university has provided. It's still super expensive. And so in order to meet those economic needs, they're having to take on 2 to 3 part-time jobs, which is also a time commitment that is being taken away from being able to engage socially, making new friends and clubs and societies on campus. And as a result, because the majority of their time is taken up with actually working 2-3 part-time jobs, their primary identity has become as a part-time worker doing a little bit of university study on the side, often in their bedroom and not in person in class. And so those two factors have created a vastly different experience for us as ministry workers trying to connect with university age Christians and non-Christians.
Yeah. And it is interesting as well that out on that parents living at home compared to the share house, especially a share house close to campuses, mm-hmm. When I was a student, but even when I began working with the Uni Fellowship of Christians, you know, most years you'd kind of, for example, have the boys' share house and the girls' share house, and they might host social events, evangelistic courses, growth groups, but also do all that informal evangelism where, what are you doing? I finished class. I'll go and mm-hmm. see if anyone's at the boys' house. And if everyone's busy, I can still just flop in their lounge room and do some of my study, or, you know, suddenly then we're having a theological debate or blah, blah, blah. You know, it all just kind of invite your non-Christian mate and then they're joining in playing Mario Kart, all that kind of stuff. Except for those family homes that are close enough and have the floor plan and the culture that welcomes hangout zones. Yeah, that's all gone too, which is quite a difference. And the residentials, as you mentioned, if they're, some of them can be quite good, but you would know, Christine, having been a residential fellow at Jane Franklin Hall, that was just big enough, wasn't it? That kind of high 100s, 200-ish students, that's enough to be able to then do like evangelistic event or a Christian Bible study, and kind of there's enough dynamic in that thing. But that was quite a Hogwarts-style classic college
and
context.
Super insular. You rarely bring anybody from that outside in.
Yeah. It was big enough that didn't matter because it could do its own thing, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas some of these places, because they're more apartmentsy, even if they do have some social dynamic, the risk could be it's not quite big enough to be able to be a ministry site of its own, but it's sufficiently insular and self-contained to meet your needs enough. So it's like the family issue you were saying, where it's like, I've got a couple of friends and a couple of Christian mates, and it's kind of enough to tick the box, but not enough to get a mission movement really kind of rolling. And often they're swipe in, swipe out places that don't have, you know, like aren't quite as easy to facilitate the mission that you could do at Jane Franklin Hall, because it was sort of like a a para-university institution, so it could broker its own partnerships, you know, whereas these things, it's often like it's UTAS or it's, you know, no go. Yeah, and so that's an interesting one to observe as well, that you kind of, you want the residential city to be big enough that it can be its own ministry hub, but if it's not quite that big enough, then it ends up, yeah, and just being a gated community, yeah. Andy, any other thoughts on some of these changes and how we've noticed its impact on ministry culture?
I mean, I echo everything. I mean, I think one, building on that, one change is that when you've lost this central place, these good gathering locations, and locations that are accessible, and you feel like you can stay around and you can kind of set up shop to study and sort of kind of live and breathe in that way. When you lose that and then you start going, all right, well, I'm at home, I'm online, I'm working more, your life retreats increasingly actually from the university, and your life is formed and directed, and who you are is by kind of just what you're deciding to do, rather than you are going to a place for the whole day and you're carried along or you're directed or you're set up or you're formed by everything that's taking place. And so I think the subtle shift that we're beginning to observe is that university becomes one of the number of things that I do as a young person, rather than I am a uni student and all of me is uni student. And so there's a shift there, which then means the level of engagement in university things changes. So one quick example is societies don't make so much sense in your life, because you're not going to a place and staying the whole day or the whole week at a place. So, well, why do I need to join that chess group or even go to that gym or be a part of that particular political group or whatever it may be? I've already got my own life over here, or my other group of mates, or my other hobby, or things that I'm into. And so then that starts kind of peeling apart. And so there's kind of social impacts like that that we think we're beginning to observe.
It's a little bit, one helpful way of describing it is a school leaver uni student, and there's variation, but more of them look a lot more like what a TAFE student or a mature age student would look like. So yeah, I'm going to TAFE.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, I'm studying at uni, but I've got my life.
Yeah.
I'm just doing this as a part of it. In a sense, that's much more, if not most, uni students now, even school leavers, 18-year-olds. And they might join a club, but it might just be because you haven't got round to joining a gym before, or you haven't got round, you know, you'd like to do some bushwalking. It's not really part of that identity. It's just one convenient way to access a goods or service provider, if you like, rather than it being part of a lifestyle. Yeah.
And I think within this as well, it's no longer really clearly black and white. I am a student, I'm not a student. There's this spectrum where you go, yeah, some people, a whole bunch of people are still experiencing that. Like, for instance, if you're in engineering, right, you're in a lot of the time, you're having a similar taste of a bit what it was like before. But all the way down to going, oh, I'm in a few times a week, I'm in once a week, I'm in once every couple of weeks, so I kind of just go in only if I need to. And so you've got this spectrum of what a university experience is happening. And so then everybody's experience is really different. And so kind of what everybody wants or doesn't want from university, again, is really, really different. So there's just this huge diversity of what it means to be a student in Tasmania now compared to previously. So that's a shift in people's minds again, to kind of go, oh, hang on a second, I need to put a category of sort of 18 to 24 year old more first, and going, they're doing life in this age and they're doing a number of things in this age group, rather than they're just a student doing all the student things at a single student place.
Yeah, so let's move to that label thing, because it is, I think, true that if you said uni students, even to a group of people of whom all of them studying at uni, not necessarily all of them would emotionally start listening to what comes next.
Yeah.
Because of the reasons you just said. There you go. So for uni students here, and some people would self-select out of that descriptor, mm-hmm. like a mature age student might. They're going, yeah, I'm a uni student, but they're not really talking to me. Mm-hmm. And so you're suddenly, or if they connect with it, they're not emotionally connecting with the label. You know what I mean? So you're going, well, you know, a bit like someone who lives in a suburb because that's where they could afford to live. But if you said now to residents of blah, blah suburb, they'd self-select out because they don't emotionally go, like, I'm here just because I could afford it. I don't see myself as a, you know, a local, you know, as soon as I can, you know, do up the house and sell and move, I will. My life's elsewhere. Were you about to say something, Christine? Did I see your?
No.
Yeah, so let's talk about this label then, that uni student may not be always the most helpful label. And if we keep using that kind of terminology and especially talk about ministry and evangelism on the campus or UTAS, everything we've said says, well, there is no on campus in any single or even sort of simplistic way, really. And at UTAS as a place means as much online through the online course delivery as it means in person in a lecture or tutorial room. So that way of thinking that is so, I mean, I'm sure many people pray for us and give to us and imagine that what we're doing is exactly what they experienced when they were uni students. Lunchtime sermons every week in a lecture theatre, Bible studies on campus, in classroom spaces, stalls running 9 till 3, handing out flyers and giveaways. And hanging out in the lawn, walking up evangelism, all that kind of stuff. That's what people envision us doing. It's like that, you know, that meme, you know, what I do, what my parents think I do, what my friends think I do. It's kind of like that. But some of us can't break those images in our head. But it's just very, very different now. And part of it then is how we talk, you know, that talking about at UTAS, on campus, uni student. Now, Andy suggested that an age bracket and certain sort of milestone markers is one way of thinking about it. Christine, do you want to expand on that a little? What are your thoughts on some of the different terminologies or frameworks of clarifying who's our ministry and mission to in Hobart now that UTAS is in such a different zone?
I will take it, for example, the fellowship group that I was leading this past semester, those who engaged with us the most deeply this past semester, I noticed a couple of variables that were similar that are worth bringing up. So that'll help paint a picture. Right. So those who engaged with us initially and stuck were a group of 5 students. There was one student who was like the first category that I mentioned, the local student who is from the local area, goes to a local church, and she's chosen to live with her family and her siblings and has lots of family and then also travel constraints, not quite having her own full license yet, kind of dependent on a parent to drop her off in the city if they're heading that way or figuring out the bus timetable. And so if a lot of our students whose families can afford not to live in the inner city but outer city, a lot of students are traveling 20 to 30 minutes to come into class.
Can I pause on that as well? This is one downside to not having a full city move. Is there's less wood pressure on the councils to radically transform parking and public transport options. We've lost that. So those who are coming to the city, I know someone who's at music school and they talk about the Hedberg shuffle, which is everyone goes out, changes their cars around, renews the meters, you know, warns against the traffic inspectors, because we haven't moved to the city to force an infrastructure upgrade to make it easy to do what Christine's describing, and we won't now have the pressure and incentive to do that caused by gridlock and all that kind of stuff. So that's another little missed thing that's happened. But yeah, keep going, Christine. So that's one person, that kind of commuter student.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a lot of challenges just to get her on campus and to stay on campus, like what you mentioned with the parking. Her schedules might also be dictated by the bus schedule. If she's living 20 to 30 minutes out, those buses only come every hour. And if one's coming up and she has to wait a whole nother hour before the next one, she's making some choices about, do I go home now or do I stick around? And often, if she can't think of a reason to stay, she might just go home. Well, the fellowship groups gave her a reason to stay. It also gave her a reason to come onto campus in the first place. We were delighted one week when we were just talking around the table and said, like, oh, so what classes do you have on today? And she's like, I don't actually have anything. And one of the other fellowship group members was just like, what? You mean you came in just for this? And we were all just, our hearts were just like, oh, we love you too.
That's gorgeous, yeah.
So there's a lot of challenges, and she's one who came at the very beginning and she's stuck. The other four in the group are not from Hobart, and so they were keenly looking for ways to connect with other Christians during their week. Not being from Hobart, they were in the process of looking for a local church to go to, finding that a particular struggle, trying one week, not quite sticking, skipping it the next week because something came up, someone invited them on a bushwalk. Trying another one the next week, 6 months in, some of them were still talking about a struggle. So the fellowship group became their moment to connect with other Christians during the week, which made a challenge for me to constantly keep on top of this conversation, this discipleship conversation. Like, it is, you know, that feeling that you feel when you come in to meet with us and pray and read the Bible and connect. It is worthwhile making similar efforts on a Sunday to connect with a local body of Christ so that you're getting fed richly from the reading and the explaining of God's word. You are being encouraged by singing in unison with other believers of different ages and stages in life who are on about the same things of loving Jesus and loving others through song. So that became a real discipleship opportunity. Commuters coming in and finding community and finding reasons to stay, but also people who are from outside the Hobart area who didn't already have those connections and were craving it.
Yeah. And we notice less engaged are those in churches. We've noticed a few churches now with very robust ministries to young adults, often then pulling in people from other churches still into these kind of hubs. That's really thrived noticeably more since COVID. But often the local commuter students who find their way into the fellowship are motivated to are either those who are not at those churches or who just don't fit into that, you know, for whatever reason, don't quite vibe with those groups at the church level and find something extra in this kind of thing. So, yeah, there are these people still that need to be reached and ministered to. And it's got to be said, the sociology of UTAS now in a bunch of ways, the online learning, the diffuse geography, none of that stuff helps habit formation. Remember how hard it was for some people struggling, say, with mental illness during COVID, the disruption of regular routines and going in and out and whatever made it really hard to sleep well, eat well, exercise, you know, it really had negative impact. In some ways, UTAS prolongs that for people at this stage of life where they're just the beginning of forming these habits. And if they're then moving to a whole new place and they don't have geography and sociology and timetables that force just normal human well-being practices, it's already hard for an 18-year-old to actually get it together and go to church once they've moved out of home. How much harder when all these other factors aren't helping you? It makes it harder still. And this is maybe just a bit of a sidebar, but Andy, you were talking about the university town experience in the UK and how churches would really maximize that connection point thing. I'll get you to talk about that. But what we need to ponder is now, for all these reasons, because you don't get a critical mass coming on any single Sunday or two, it becomes harder how to learn from the UK experience when one of these members of Christine's fellowship group might not rock up till 6 weeks after the start of the college year, you know. But it is worth hearing the UK thing just to challenge churches to think, what is the version of this that we can do in a very different context to the UK? So, Andy, in the UK, most people move to go to a university town to study, and that's true in the US too, Christine.
Yeah.
What do churches do at the start of a university year in order to effectively welcome and integrate, especially Christians, as they move to a university town?
Yeah, sure. So before answering the church, the one thing that the equivalent groups of us will do is because they got so many students that are coming, that the ministers or a representative from the church would, the equivalent would be, they would meet us at Sandy Bay campus. They would be there with their model cars or their minibus or whatever. And then essentially it's a bit like a holder sign up. And so it's like, come to church A, come to church B, come to church C. And then you choose your adventure and then they take you to their church. So the churches are helping that transition. They're inviting that. They're wanting to make it as easy as possible. And that will happen for a few weeks in a row. So that's kind of facilitated between the group and the church. Then as far as the experience of in the UK with the churches is that really the first number of weeks are set up to help students understand who is the church, what is about, what does it believe, what goes on here. So there's that side of information. Then there is also student meals. So there'll be a lunch after each service that the church puts on to help them find a home. And so there might be someone speaking at that to talk about those things I mentioned and to help them figure out, well, what does it look like to step into this new stage of life? And at least the church that I know of in the UK that I grew up in, they're really keen to see those students make a decision of integrating really quickly into church. So they say, don't keep bouncing around. We'd love to have you. Would you like to stay? Is there a reason why not? Not really. Okay, get stuck in.
Christine, you're noticing this, aren't you? Like the people sort of having this plan to check out infinite churches across like 6 months and then surprise, surprise, they don't land anywhere. What's your advice, you know, like picking up on that, what's your, as the working at the Christian group level, backing up the pastors on this, find a church and stick, what would you say to a first year as they move to Hobart?
Yeah, great question. My advice is give yourself a month. And so the first week, commit, the first week you arrive, I'm going to visit a church in the morning and then find a church that has a service in the afternoon or the evening and visit that one too. In your first week, you've already experienced two churches. Your second week, why not visit one of those churches back again and then a second one in the afternoon? By the end of the third week, you might have revisited another one, maybe gone back again. By the fourth one, you have a good idea of at least 2, 3, at most 4 different type churches, their vibe, what their values are, what kind of services they have, what you like, what you don't like. After week 4, a month, you have a good experience with a range of church communities. And if you've been going to Uni Fellowship or the equivalent AFES type ministry, you're meeting other students and you're going along to their church too. Maybe they're giving you a lift and you're getting to know their friends at their church and their families. And you like that vibe here, but you're really keen for the music in the afternoon service of this other church. You've got choices that you can make. By the end of the fourth week, my advice is choose one and stick with it for the second month and then see how you go. There might be something big that comes up in that second month that you think is a deal breaker, and that is okay. Some of these things just happen. But you still have those other 3 or 4 to back up on, or you've made other friends. By your third month, if you're not convinced that you want to stick with this church that you've been to for a month, you've got to choose another one and stick with it for a month, if not. But by the time you go home at the end of the semester, you can then report back to your family who are probably wondering, hey, what is your church commitment and life like? What different churches have you tried? Have you stuck with one? You can go home and tell Nana and Pop Pop that you've been going to the local Baptist church and it's really lovely. there's been a family who's kind of adopted you, invite them to your, you're invited weekly to their house for lunch afterwards, but you've got, you've surrounded yourself with Christians who love Jesus and his word and love the people of God and want to see Jesus proclaimed across all the nations. And they are going to be there with you potentially your next 3 years that you're on campus. And they're going to be carrying you along spiritually in partnership, Lord willing, with us and what we're doing at Uni Fellowship.
There it is right there. So now that's the kind of thing we're trying to do. We'd love pastors to be helping us with the same messaging. Now, what? How do we pick up on the UK thing where, look, if you went on, there's no single place to go to be a taxi rank to take people to church on Sunday. So you can't do that. And there's not the critical mass really to make it worth your time. No. But not quite. And similarly, you can't, for the reasons we've said, be guaranteed that there's these three Sundays where all of the students will all rock up and you can tick those boxes. However, let's zoom back to principles. The principle is intentionality, right? It's deliberately having a plan and implementing it at the start of the year. And you may have to do it for 6 weeks, not two or three. And it may not involve meals or whatever. But what are some ways that we can do this with the church? I think the baseline one is you should, I reckon, if you're a church in Hobart, we would love it if you prepared your preacher and your MC and your prayer to mention, amongst other things, young adults and uni students, in your welcome, in your prayers, in your applications, especially during that season of kind of February, March. Like that would in itself, it says, I see you, you're welcome here, there's a place for you here. That's a baseline thing you could do.
And your welcoming team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcoming to be ready for them. And I mean, we would love it if you also then were ready with Focus Subbies and Uni Fellowship stuff. Yeah. To help those people, you know, like optimize their Christian engagement by both inviting them back to your church next week and saying, have you found the Christian groups on campus yet? I heard a little bit about them, maybe. Well, you really should go to that too. We love those guys. You know, we'd love that, you know. Be ready for those little things. And I guess maybe have a plan in the wings that if you notice you've got X number of students, maybe you could have a plan that you go, if we get X number of students, then we activate plan after church lunch for students. You know, and it has to be a bit more reactive. But if you have X number, say, oh, by the way, if you're, you know, new to Hobart, new as a student, we'll be hosting some, and whatever it is, you've got some McCain's French fries, freezer chips and frozen pizza in the church freezer that you just, you know, your hospitality scene.
Yeah.
So, you know, something like that. And then you're ready to go a bit more reactively for the week they all rock up. Something like that could be a way. That's one thought. And any other thoughts like that? What are some creative ways in our smaller, more diffuse setting that the UK lesson could be applied?
I'll touch on a bit of a preemptive measure do before uni even begins. So something delightful that I saw an American youth pastor do was he was incredibly proactive, because we're all talking in all the churches. There was even a Sydney Anglican article that came out recently, like, how are we keeping the youth that are in our churches? How are we keeping them in the faith? Not necessarily in our particular church, but keeping them in our ecosystem of evangelical faith and belief and life. So we're all thinking about this. So this is what this one American pastor did. He knew in his particular church which universities most of his students went off to. And he had one of those maps in his office with pegs in the different locations on the American map. And you can just imagine like red string kind of connecting people and places and universities. But he had relationships with students who were already there on the ground that he could connect his year 11 and 12 students with. If they already knew that they were planning on going to this university, he was already making connections, preparing them to go to this university. He also had working relationships with those who were doing some of the main Christian campus mission movements and societies. He already had working relationships with some of the staff there that he would call up and he'd say, okay, I have three students who are arriving on campus this fall. These are their names. These are our contact details. James is arriving on this date, and so-and-so is arriving on this date. He also has connections with the local church that's attached to their denomination. He's calling up their young adults pastor and saying, these are the...
Brilliant.
So there's a lot you can do before you go.
And we love it. Don't we love it when we get those messages?
Yeah. Yeah, love it. Yeah. Sometimes...
Funny thing is, we often get a more...
as well.
Parents and other AFES staff more so than churches, which is funny. We do get some churches, but often it's anxious parents and proactive AFES staff. Mm-hmm. We'd love it if we got it from pastors as well. Yeah, and youth leaders and stuff. Because these bridge points, right? Any transition point, you know, Sunday school to youth group to college group to, these are all drop-off points. Just like when someone moves city, that's a time when they can also just stop going to church. Then this transition to university. So it's such a delicate baton pass point. So as part of your pastoral responsibility, something like that makes a lot of sense. And even if it's within your own city, and I guess this is an interesting thing to realize that it might seem to you like nothing's changed. They're still going to church when they're in grade 12. They're still going to church when they're in first year uni in Hobart. But actually something has changed. And it may not happen quite as quickly that they tune out, but they could still if you don't kind of watch that transition point. Yeah. Can we go back to this young adult stuff? Or did you have any more to say on that church welcome, Andy?
I wasn't going to add any more principles, but, you know, intentionality on both sides is really crucial. I think just commenting on that, though, is we've spoken largely about new people coming in. But, really keep an eye on those who are transitioning up from the kind of high school and actually going, they can almost just be a bit forgotten. And you can sort of presume, are they studenting now, presuming they're sort of wanting to still come to church, presuming they still care, presuming maybe they've got in touch with the group, presuming maybe they're going, there can be a lot of presumptions, but actually I wonder what it would be like if they were treated like they had just stepped in that Sunday and actually go.
You think about the differences, right? They've got a car, they've got a license, they can go into a pub, they're now living a very different timetable to school. You know, even high school has more structure than most of your degrees now. Their friendship network is at least broadening a little, a lot less often than it used to pre-COVID and whatever, but still it's broadening. There are quite a lot of psychological changes. And if they're going to come to church even on Sunday, they may not be doing it all together with their family every Sunday morning.
And
they
they've
may
got
be going
freedom
in their own
now
car.
To say no as an adult as well. Like who's going to make them get out of bed and come on time now? Like it's not necessarily
mum
and dad.
A lot of identity changes.